thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
It's 2:08. We're here till 3. Just a little tiny show we do from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue.
Lord have mercy.
This is John Williams. Remember, I'm on Saturdays, too, from 10 a.m. until noon. I think on Saturday we'll talk about the piece also in the Sun-Times today. I thought it was pretty good. Sue Anaveros wrote about wedding dances. Are you a fan of, like, has this ship sailed, or do we still love it when wedding couples and wedding parties do special entry dances? You know, those videos went viral and everybody loved them. Oh, my God, here comes the bride and groom.
If it's done really well, or you got to have a good one.
Yeah, I think the bar is pretty high these days because otherwise it's... Well, so anyway, she wrote a piece about it, and we'll talk a little bit about that. My son's getting married this fall, so we're, as a family, sort of in the throes right now of all things wedding, all things reception, all things save the date. And it's a whole new wild west out there for wedding planning, let me tell you. One last quick text before we go to our guest regarding the Maher debacle. We were visiting with our guest a moment ago about Bill Maher putting Ben Sasse on the spot. Or did Ben Sasse sort of lay the bait himself? Regarding the Maher debacle, John, I have sympathy for Senator Sasse because I could tell by the look on his face, he was utterly shocked and uncomfortable. I don't think I would have been quick enough in my thinking to say anything. I have been in that position before, and I'm always so shocked when someone says something that outrageous, and I don't know what to say. He was on live TV, which made it worse. The responsibility is on Maher for putting his guest in such a horrible position. It's 2:10, so tomorrow and Thursday will be big dates. The Rosenstein testimony, the assistant attorney general, and then you've got Bill Comey's testimony before Congress on Thursday. I said Bill Comey, it's James Comey. Talk a little bit about this. Now is Serena Marshall, the Washington correspondent for ABC News. Serena, welcome back. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Hi, John. I'm good. How are you?
Good. People are literally comparing this to, I don't know, the OJ trial or the Nixon impeachment hearings. As in terms of everybody wondering what's going to be said, this is a big week, isn't it?
It is a big week up here on Capitol Hill. And, of course, it starts tomorrow. There is the Senate intelligence hearing on FISA. Now, that's the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. That may sound familiar because when we talk about reports of unmasking, specifically around those Trump campaign aides who were caught up in foreign surveillance, this is the act that allows that to happen. It basically allows intelligence officials to monitor communications of foreign targets. And then in that process, Americans get caught up in that. And then when they are unmasked by security officials to understand the context of that communication. And that is what tomorrow is going to focus on before we get to the Jim Comey testimony on Thursday.
So the FBI, nobody is saying that the FBI, the CIA, anybody like that, was targeting the Trump campaign per se. Rather, they were listening to the people they might normally, in the course of their business, Russians here. And lo and behold, they were hearing what appeared to be references to the Trump team or Trump team voices. Is that what we think happened?
Exactly. That's what we've heard before testified on Capitol Hill. Tomorrow, you're going to have the director of national intelligence, the acting director for the FBI, the National Security Agency director, and Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general at the Department of Justice, all up here to talk about how that act allows Americans to be caught up in the surveillance, because that act actually expires at the end of this year, and Congress will have to reauthorize it. But it does allow Americans to get caught up in that foreign surveillance. And when they're caught up in it, intelligence officials will ask to do what is called quote-unquote unmasking. We've heard a lot about that term. That is so that the intelligence officials can understand the context of those conversations.
So what does unmasking involve?
It basically requests a high-level intelligence official, because normally these FISA warrants have to go through a court. They have to go to a judge, say, you know, we want to have foreign intelligence on this person. And then once they have that intelligence and they have those conversations with, for example, an ambassador or somebody from overseas, they can say, well, this conversation is very questionable, but in order to understand the full scope of it, we need to know who exactly they're talking to. So they'll go back to the intelligence agency, for example, the National Security Council might go back to the FBI or the CIA and say, I need to know who they were talking to in order to understand the full scope of this conversation, if this is something we need to be worried about or if this is just normal operations.
Well, what if it's something in between? That is, there was nothing compromising U.S. safety, but it did look like the Trump Organization was having inappropriate, that's my word, conversations with the Russians. What if it's not so clear?
Well, that is why they might need to unmask something, right? So under the FISA, that act, if federal agencies monitor digital communications of foreigners located overseas, so you might have a Russian official, a German official, Chinese official overseas, and they are being monitored. It's typical that the U.S. government does that, right? That's not atypical. And what happens is they'll be monitoring that conversation and hear an American on that conversation, and they know they're talking to an American either through the phone line or, you know, other tracking that they have. And they'll say, this is a very weird conversation. We need to know who they're talking to in order to get the full scope of that conversation. And that's when they'll make that request to unmask the person. So you can expect tomorrow a lot of the senators to focus around how that works, how Americans get caught up in it, and how Americans' data might be collected or stored, which for some raises critical privacy and civil liberties issues, which is one of the things we're definitely going to be hearing about tomorrow.
Well, I think we've had that conversation before, not that it's over, but I'm less interested in the process and more in the content myself. However they got it, whatever means they used, what did it say? For instance, let me ask you this, Serena. Do transcripts exist? Will we ever hear the audio tape that we're talking about?
Well, those are, you know, classified documents, so that'll have to be coming out in some form of the Russia investigation if they decided to make those tapes public. Obviously, since it does the security agencies that oversee these FISA warrants, that would have to come from those agencies. Now, it is a possibility, let's say Mueller, the special counsel overseeing the Russia investigation, when all of this comes out later, and if they bring any charges against anybody, we could see tapes of that sort. But that is a big if, and it's up to those intelligence agencies.
What should the Trump administration be worried about relative to all of this?
I think the question Democrats are asking is, if campaign officials were wrapped up in this foreign surveillance, which according to intelligence officials, they said some were because they were caught up in these FISA communications, then it's the intent and if they were knowingly communicating with Russian officials, because that's the other thing. We've heard former intelligence officials testify that either knowingly or unknowingly, wittingly or unwittingly, were they just part of this conversation and didn't know that they were talking to a Russian agent, or were they having these conversations with intent? And that is what I think the senators really want to get at the core of this.
Well, that may be part of Wednesday's testimony, but I think people are more also interested in Thursday's testimony when the former FBI director talks. Are they going to ask him, did you literally say to the president three separate times that you're not under investigation?
Well, and John, we actually have some exclusive ABC reporting on this where a source familiar with Comey's thinking has told us that Comey will stop short of saying President Trump obstructed justice in the Flynn probe, but he will say he was uncomfortable with some of the conversation, which is what led him to write those memos that we kept hearing about. This source telling us he's not going to Congress to make accusations about the president's intent. Instead, he's there to share his concerns.
Still, I wonder if three separate times Comey told Trump that he's not under investigation. That's what the president says.
Yes, that is what the president said. And again, this source telling us he will dispute the president on that claim. He will stop short of saying he obstructed justice. But when it comes to that claim, he told the president he was not under investigation. He will dispute that.
He will dispute that. And it's not his job to say whether or not that's obstruction of justice anyway. To be honest with you, I don't think I need him to say that. We'll let the Senate or another court decide that, right?
Well, and Comey is a lawmaker. He was the deputy attorney general under President Bush. He ran the FBI, obviously. And so he knows as a legal mind what he should and shouldn't say. And so he's not going to make claims about somebody else's thinking. Instead, he's going to say how I felt, what I think, and what was said to me, point blank, what I know.
What else maybe would Comey say that would lead somebody else to draw that conclusion?
Well, all we know from these conversations is that he will stop short of saying the president obstructed justice in the Flynn probe, but he'll say he was uncomfortable with what the president asked him about the, according to that memo Comey wrote, he said the president told him, I hope you can see your way clear of letting this go to letting Flynn go. And Comey will testify that he felt uncomfortable, that that made him uneasy.
Right.
And then that could lead others to draw conclusions.
Well, are those facts in dispute? Is it agreed upon that the president dismissed the vice president? Who else was in that room when they were having dinner on Valentine's Day? It was the
meeting. Vice president and the attorney general were
attorney
asked
general.
To leave when some of
right.
this some of these conversations happened. So from what we know so far, these conversations was had in private.
Okay, but yeah, but that's what I'm wondering is the telling of that story too. They're there, and then the president turns to the attorney general and the vice president says, "I need you guys to leave," and then he turns to Comey and he says that "I need you to kind of look the other way or help me out on this." Are those facts in dispute, or does everybody agree that, in fact, that's what happened?
Well, we only know from what sources have told us about that memo that Comey wrote, what was said. And Comey was known for taking copious amounts of notes, known for documenting everything. That's something that many people familiar with him have said he does. And so he wrote down, according to those who have seen the memo, quote, "I hope you can see your way to letting this go, to letting Flynn go, and that also he is a good guy. I hope you can let this go."
Okay, maybe it's not his job to judge whether or not that's obstruction of justice, that or the other statement, but shouldn't he have brought this up right away? Shouldn't he have said something about it sooner?
Well, and that's what some people have questioned previously in some of these hearings. And according to, again, those familiar with with former director Comey's thinking, have said that he didn't want to impede the Russia investigation. So he did share it with some close to him, but not those overseeing the Russia investigation, because he didn't want it to impede their thinking and have them draw conclusions from things that they didn't come to on their own.
To these two points that we're speaking about, how likely is it that he'll be forthright? Is it possible that he'll just say, as they always do, "I can't comment on an ongoing investigation"?
Well, there is going to be some of that, because remember, before he was asked to testify, he said no, and then they asked him again, this time in a public hearing, and then he delayed his response because he wanted to consult with Special Counsel Mueller before he came forward. And so there is certain elements that we know he's going to have to say, "I can't comment on that, it's an ongoing investigation," or "I'm not read into that because it's the ongoing investigation, so my knowledge ends when I was fired." But at the same time, Comey testified publicly in 2007, and it was the same kind of situation. He first denied it because he wanted a public hearing. He wanted to make sure there was no misconstruing what he said. And so if you base his upcoming testimony on how he was in the past, he was very forthright, very honest, and he said what he felt, and he didn't try to draw conclusions about what other people thought.
Does Comey have credibility on this? If it becomes a he said, I wonder how Republicans, Democrats, the public at large will sort of judge his testimony.
Well, I mean, it's definitely caused some splits politically, right? You have the Republicans versus the Democrats. But the Senate Intelligence Committee has done a very good job of maintaining a joint, united front when it comes to all of this. They're really trying to be a voice of reason in it all. And Director Comey, well, he has come under a lot of scrutiny in the past year, investigation into Russia, and obviously comments he made on the Clinton emails and everything. But before that, he was known as a very level-headed man who had great respect across the political spectrum on Capitol Hill. Remember, he served as deputy attorney general under the Bush administration. He wasn't political. He was a career legal mind. And so it wasn't until the last year that he kind of started taking on these political tinges to his reputation. But overall, those that are familiar with him and know him well and have worked with him had always good things to say before that.
I wonder if the Trump team is planning for the worst-case scenario. What's the worst-case scenario? Would it be that the president fired Sessions because Sessions was getting too close to the truth?
Comey?
Comey, I guess, yeah, right. Sessions recused himself. The president has sort of said as much that now that he's out of the way, my life is a little easier. I wonder if that's the worst-case scenario for the president.
Well, we've heard that the White House is setting up a war room to respond to some of these, the Russia investigation and the claims. And the president has signed or has asked a law firm to represent him outside. Now, when we ask that question at White House briefings, they pivot and say outside counsel. So the White House is trying to separate themselves a little bit from this investigation because they've admitted it's become a roadblock in pushing any policies forward.
Okay, Serena Marshall, Washington correspondent for ABC News. Riveting stuff. Let's continue to follow this and visit again down the road.
Sounds good. Thank you, John.
Serena Marshall with ABC.